This is KJ and Lyons. KJ Carson and John Lyons right now on WEEI.
Well, clearly we're not to day 100 yet, but this is KJ and Lyons on WEEI, 617-779-7937, text line 37937. John, that is Gerard Mayo addressing where things stand with the team after the soft, then playing soft, to all the hubbubaloo that's happened since then. I ask you, on a scale of 1 to 10, how much do you think he's lost the team?
Can we just spend the whole 4 hours talking about the Celtics instead, KJ? You know, a lot more fun. No, I'm
over
just kidding.
One game.
I'm just kidding.
Right.
Oh, so, a scale of
way
1
to
10.
Way to be focused to start a show, yeah.
A scale of 1 to 10, 4-ish.
Yeah.
Like, that's the thing. I don't want to go crazy. Like, the people are like, oh, it's a, you know, he's a 10, he's lost there. But I don't think so. Like, he's made some missteps and some verbal missteps, and there's been some times they've got out-coached. But I think, again, got to look at the grand scheme of things here. There's seven games into his first season. There's a lot of young players. There's a lot of new players. So I'm not going to go to the extent of, oh, no, he's lost everything. But still, I think putting it at a 4 only 7 weeks in is a pretty troubling sign, at least from my perspective.
I'm probably going to shock you here. I'm probably going to say it's a 6. But
real, I expected you to be lower, to be honest.
Because there's a caveat. Because there are a lot of pieces on this team that can eventually be lost. Right, I mean, that's the thing. Do you really believe that the biggest building blocks have reached this team yet outside of Drake May for the future?
Not necessarily. Yeah, maybe Gonzalez.
Maybe,
yeah,
Gonzalez.
On
right,
the whole,
right.
No, in fairness, on the whole, no, not really.
Right, so if you've lost the team, maybe at a 6, maybe the idea is to start kind of getting the message out there, hey, if you don't want to be here, I can kind of see and show over your performance over the last year or two that we're probably starting to look to probably replace you with younger and hungrier guys who want to get the job done. I think that's where we're starting to get to in this transition with Mayo, right? With Belichick, you had control of the team and you were the head coach. So technically, you could stand next to coach and start talking about contract stuff, and he could legitimately give you an answer, yes or no, that would go through. Now we're at a point where, okay, we're about to just having the head coach. And having just the head coach is probably the toughest job at the ground level, because Elliott Wolf's challenges are at another level in terms of who's willing to say yes, what agents want to bring guys here, you know, does the money really entice them? All these different things that, you know, are cerebral. Gerard Mayo's got to deal with all the guttural. So, look, if you've lost some of the team and the team has lost, what, all of but one game? I'm not really mad if it's a 6, because some of these guys are not even playing up to their contract or even being worth here.
Yeah, and that is an interesting point. And I think it was Ross Tucker was on with the afternoon show, I think it was yesterday, and he talked about, like, hey, there's a lot of guys here that they chose to pay and chose to re-sign, and they're not all playing up to the contracts that they signed, right? And that's something that maybe that's just a player issue, a short-term issue. Maybe it's a coaching issue. I don't know. I think that remains to be seen. I found that comment interesting, though, because there are several guys here that they chose to re-sign from a team last year that went 4-13, but as we know, there were still some good players on it. They chose to re-sign a lot of those guys, and I think they thought coming into the year, hey, yeah, we might struggle, but these guys that we re-signed are going to be good players for us. And then if you look at right now, I mean, Tavai hasn't played well. He got an extension, I think, towards the end of Belichick, maybe early Elliott Wolf, but he hasn't played well. Duggar's missed some time, and he was great in week one. Since then, I think he's been good but not great. Mike Onwenu hasn't been as good as in years past. Stevenson, we've talked quite a bit about him. He hasn't been as good as he was in years past. So I think that's another issue here, is a lot of these guys that Mayo and Wolf identified as guys we want to keep around, which, by the way, full disclosure, I agreed with a lot of those signings. It's just so far, several of those guys have not played up to the contracts that they signed.
The other side of that coin, I think, is maybe they re-signed those guys because the other guys that they might have been looking to sign choose not to come here. And we've discussed this here on KJ Alliance here over the last couple of days in terms of, like, you know, how New England is viewed by agents and players and so forth, where the most money doesn't necessarily mean it's the most enticing situation for them. And not winning probably makes it even worse. So to say, hey, I want to go somewhere where they can give me a lot of money, but it's going to be a headache for a while, you know, I can spend all the money in the world. It doesn't hurt these. It doesn't help these broken bones and stretched tendons and bad muscles. So I'd probably feel like I would want to play for something that feels like I'm contending. So if you're Elliott Wolf, you're probably saying, you know what? Better to keep what we know than to not even be able to keep those guys and not even get quality guys. It could be, it could look very much like the Carolina Panthers. It's like by a slice of cheese thin, the difference between what's going on here and the Carolina Panthers. Like, it's just that thin.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. And I think the key separator there is you actually have a good young quarterback and they don't.
Right.
Like, really, to me, I mean, maybe there's another, like, I don't know if they have a young defensive player as good as Gonzalez. I know they have some down there. But with the re-signings, I understand your premise there, and we've talked a lot about it, that, you know, the two biggest things that attract free agents are winning and money, right?
Yeah.
But I think with some of these re-signings, it was just guys they flat-out wanted. Like, they've said publicly, Mike Onwenu was the best free agent tackle on the market, and they re-signed him. And again, I agreed with them. I think he's been a great tackle for years. He's not playing as well this year. I mean, they chose to pay Ramondre Stevenson in, what, June? I mean, that was after they had signed Antonio Gibson.
Yeah,
they
that was his practice today, right?
Right. Like, they chose to pay him, like, later on. So I think with some of these are guys that they wanted around. And independent of other guys, I think they could have brought in. And again, I think they're good players. Some of them are playing well, and then some of them just aren't playing well. And I think that's added to some of the frustration. I think it does remain to be seen, maybe worth monitoring. Is it a coaching issue, or is it just a player issue, or is it a combination of the two?
So that's the thing. Moving forward, like, I think the most important thing that has to happen for a successful new regime to be in place for Mayo is the continuing development that we're seeing of Drake May, and that there is a good relationship between the quarterback and the head coach. And you could see, and then you're already starting to see pieces of it, where the quarterback is speaking with a leadership tone, right? It doesn't sound like, I gotta be better, I guess. There's some confidence behind what he's saying, and he's not got his head down. Even though his first couple of games have been losses, you point to Justin Herbert. I think he was, 7-9 in his first season, but the first six games, I think he lost in a row somewhere in there, or was 1-5 in his first season.
I don't recall. I know they had some struggles. I don't recall
right.
The exact record.
So better to have struggles. It's no different than hitting a baseball solid, even though it ends up being an out, right? The important thing is you're making solid contact, and eventually those balls will land for hits. And I think it's the same thing with Drake May. And it feels like May and Mayo have this combination going with them where they get along, they're on the same page, there doesn't seem to be a disconnect. And in part, like, really, him, Gonzalez, like when you start saying, like, who are the people that can, that you, if the Patriots get a call for a haul for everything, you absolutely say no to, you'd probably say May and Gonzalez at this point. Yeah, I think
maybe
anybody
Barmore
else.
Too, a healthy Barmore.
A healthy Barmore, yeah. Right?
And it's everything. A very short list.
Right. So when it's such a short list, that's why I say being a six, losing the locker room, is kind of a statement of a locker room that's already kind of lost it. So maybe this is one of those situations where the comments that were made about, like, we're playing soft is a way of saying, if you can't perform on a team that's only won one game, what makes you think that another team that's even won four games sees your services as valuable? Or that you'll have to prove what you're going to do, because that's how they look at it, right? It's like they look at it as this is a chance to play in the NFL, and there are guys who are still training right now for their chance to get back in. There are guys who are watching games and saying, oh, man, I would have been on that tackle. They know this. So if you're in a rebuild, that's where you're most likely to find out and not have your job, because we could take a chance with some guy who is, if you're not doing the job and the whole team's not doing the job, we might as well just find a guy to do the job.
And I think one thing to keep in mind with that, too, is one of the parts of being a good coach is to get those guys to buy in. Like, maybe those guys that are skeptical at first or skeptical of Mayo, or maybe were Belichick guys or guys from the outside, whatever, getting them to buy in. So that's why I think, and we've talked about this quite a bit, but right. Mayo coming out and saying these guys are soft and then kind of backtracking it the next day, I think it makes some of those guys look at them a little sideways. And whereas I think Mayo can learn from that and say, well, those are part of being, you're not going to get everyone on board, and you're going to probably get rid of some guys after this year, but you want to get as many of those guys on board as you can, because that's the fastest way to get back to winning, right? Get the good players on board. I think he's got May on board. It feels like he's got Gonzalez on board, but I don't really know. But does he have some of those longer-term vets on board, guys that have had success either here or other places before, that have played under different head coaches? Does he have all those guys on board? And I think that is a challenge, and this is not just a him thing, it's a challenge for any first-year coach, but I think that's a challenge for him going forward between now and the end of the season. How many of those guys can he keep on board, or if they're not fully on board now, get on board between now and the end of the year?
617-779-7937, text line 37937, KJ and Lines, WEEI. We are still got Celtics to talk about last night. That's still to come, plus Justin Turpin checks in as well during the show. And, of course, we've got the playoff tree. What's going on in the NFL? Who's on the verge of missing the playoffs? Who's going to get in? But right now it's time to trend with Zach Coe.
Now, here's what's trending on WEEI.
Trending now brought to you by Awaken 180. The Celtics raised Banner 18 to the rafters and kicked off the pursuit of Banner 19 with a statement 132-109 win over the New York Knicks. Jason Tatum led the way for the Seas with 37 points and 10 rebounds. Jaylen Brown and Derek White were right behind him with 23 and 24 points respectively. They'll have the night off tonight before heading down to the nation's capital to take on the Wizards tomorrow night. Tip-off set 4-7. Bruins fell to the Predators 4-0 the final in Nashville last night, wrapping up a three-game road trip that saw the Bees go 1-1-1. They'll also have the night off tonight before taking on the Dallas Stars back at the Garden tomorrow. Puck drop set for 7 p.m. In NFL news, the defending Super Bowl champion Chiefs acquired wide receiver DeAndre Hopkins from the Tennessee Titans in exchange for a conditional fourth-round pick that could become a third. Also in MLB news, Netflix released their 2004 Red Sox documentary, The Comeback, today on the 20th anniversary of Game 1 of that 2004 World Series. And in a more somber note, Dodgers legend Fernando Valenzuela has passed away. He was just 63 years old. With the drastic rise of diabetes, dementia, and cancers, we've been fooled by food. Reverse the food curse at awaken180weightloss.com. My name is Zach Coe, and that's what's trending on WEEI and WEEI.com.
We're back to KJ and Lions on WEEI.
And what do you know? Here we are at Wednesday. It's KJ and Lions, WEEI. 617-779-7937, text line 37937. We're about 20 minutes away from the playoff tree, looking around the NFL. John, that's Mayo saying, look, how did the play? That's crazy. So, you know, the whole debate has been like, maybe Mayo is saying too much. Was that not a question of asking more about what was said on that play? Was that not a question to ask more of what was said?
I don't follow.
Meaning, like he said, how did the players react to what you said? And it's almost like, well, wait a minute. I thought people were saying that's something he just kept to the team, never brought it to the public. But now all the public's questions are like, well, we want to know how they responded. And
that's kind of the point, though. This is what I've been talking about all along. Because
those questions were going to come anyway.
No, they weren't going to come if he didn't say they were soft. Like, there would be questions. There'd be other questions. But he created these questions by saying that, whether he likes it or not. I mean, maybe he doesn't care, but he created these questions by saying that, because if not, they'd be asking about something else.
Yeah, I think now this week with practices and preparations for the games, I think every guy is on watch for the most part, right? KJ Osborne was asked if he wanted to be traded and just kind of laughed at first for a second, like, whoa.
Yeah, well, he posted that weird thing from his agent, but turned out wasn't really his agent about, oh, you're going to be an... And if you look at the Patriots wide receiver room over the past few months. You had Jalen Reagor post that weird photo of the Ferrari in the trailer park, and then he gets released. You have Jalen Polk contradicting Mayo really multiple times publicly.
Putting up the peace sign.
Yeah, now you have this thing from KJ Osborne. Like, I don't know. I don't know if I really love the attitude from that receiver room, especially considering you have the worst passing offense in the NFL. Like, it's just... again, I wouldn't love it if Tyreek Hill and Jaylen Waddle were doing that stuff, and they're actually good. Like, I don't know if I really love the attitude overall coming from that wide receiver room. Just, again, this is now what? Is that, that's three incidents off the top of my head. Or even look at Javon Baker's Instagram Live thing.
Right.
About like, the, I don't remember the whole incident, but it was about the cops or something. Like, what's that? Four incidents off the top of my heads that are like, really, dude?
And there's four good receivers on this team?
Yeah, right. Yeah, those guys in that one room.
That's my point, John. You could package up all four of those. Let's take Polk out of here because he's rookie. You could take those other three guys, package them together, and offer up a trade. And you know what happens? They hang up on the Patriots' ass. But like, because they're not movable pieces. So literally, you have guys who are not even, like, think about it. Mac Jones went for a sixth rounder. If you stuck Mac Jones back on this roster right now, would there be other players that could go higher than him? In a sixth rounder if they got traded?
Yeah, a handful.
And guys that we said that were taking off the table, right? So if you're KJ Osborne and you feel like, oh, man, you know, maybe I want out of here, my whole thing would be, you know, the great thing about Foxborough, it's got a major interstate you could get your ass on right now because you're not you're really not offering up anything. Nobody's going through the wall.
Yeah, sorry to cut you off, but like if Jonathan Jones, a guy who's won multiple Super Bowls and has been a leader and is still playing hard out there, if he wanted a trade to a team that was a contender, I'd be like, you know what? Okay, I can understand that. And he would probably get you, you know, maybe a fourth round pick or something, but at least like somewhat of a valuable asset because he has value. But when we have guys in that receiver room that have done next to nothing now and really not that much in their whole careers, and they're all publicly complaining, contradicting the coaches and whatnot. It just, again, that room specifically feels like a little bit of a microcosm of some of the stuff that's going on around the team where it's just like this
unattractive divas.
Yeah, you called it in the summer that substitute teacher vibe a little bit. Like, there's just, it's permeating out of the receiver room, I think, more than others, but there's just kind of that wholesale vibe kind of around things.
Well, here's the crazy thing. Godshaw, Jonathan Jones have named, these are names that have popped up, have been ones to say, hey, guys, we need to step it up. We need to be more focused. Their names have popped up. So they're
Godshaw
the ones.
Said it on this network.
There you go. So you have, so these guys that we're naming that you're saying, hey, they have some value. They understand their value of being here. Now, if you want to make this a conversation about Elliott Wolf, I could even say going back to when you had Nelson Agholor here and Jonnu Smith, it's just the quality of player that's coming here. It's almost kind of like, ha-ha, gotcha, you paid me this money, and now you can't move me. Like, these are unmovable pieces. This is what a team looks like when they start to go down that 8 to 10 year path of just kind of like, bad to mediocrity. It's mediocrity to bad, right? So the mediocrity is like you feel hope at 7-10, another 17 games. But sometimes the real case might be 4-13, 3-14, 5-12. Like if these players are like, why reward them when they're not even rewarding their own paychecks right now?
Yeah, and this is like a lot of the stuff that's happened over the past year is just what bad organizations do. I mean, think about it, like, look at what's happened over the past year. You don't invest enough in free agency. Then you draft a good young quarterback who looks pretty good. You say you have a plan with him, but then the plan looks like it kind of shifts around a little bit. You get seven games into the season and you have, you know, a team employee on a podcast saying the word mutiny, then backtracking it. Then you get seven games in and all of a sudden, oh, maybe they want to fire the coach, or guys are posting on social media and all, like, this is all these things, Adam. You have people thinking about draft position in November, right, last year, and October this year, like all
you
these things.
You did talk about it after LSU played their first game, though.
These are all the things that, like, people would make fun of the Jets for 20 years. Like, that's what you're doing right now. I mean, really, and even look, and this is not a personal thing at Mayo, but you hire a head coach without interviewing anybody, a guy who's only coached 5 years, and so far it doesn't look great, right? You promote a GM who's never been in that role before. You have an offensive coordinator who's never really called plays before, save for 1 year. You have a special teams coordinator, not your first choice. Like, again, you add any one of these things individually, you can get around and you can work with. But you put them all together collectively, and it's what bad organizations do.
So here's what's crazy for those who want to see Mayo gone right now. Do you really think the atmosphere changes?
No, and I think also, too, that's another piece of this.
Right.
Like, you think suddenly, what bad organizations do. Like, right. We were making fun of the Jets 2 weeks ago for getting rid of Robert Saleh. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
it's been, but I saw that coming, right?
No, but still, the point being, like, oh, you're going to fire that dude 5 games in and Rodgers is playing bad as a 40-year-old, but you're going to fire the head coach? Like,
that's what we're talking about here now. Well, see, that's interesting you say that, John, because the other side of that is some people are wondering, like, okay, at least the Jets made an effort to go get Aaron Rodgers and Davante Adams pretty much walked on the scene with no problem. And at least you get a – like, if you put Alan Lazard on this team, where would he rank in the receiver room?
Second, maybe.
Maybe first.
Yeah, I'm just trying to think because I don't even think he's that good anymore.
Right,
to be
honest. You've got Gary. Well, but my point being is even using someone like Alan Lazard as an example, put him on this team and some things look a little bit better even though they're not great. So the Jets, at least they made a bunch of bad decisions with named players and they're not getting the results.
And they have Garrett Wilson.
And they already have Garrett Wilson. They have Breece Hall, right? They've got an amazing defense. They've got two corners that are all pros. So you're literally talking about everything you would want to see talent-wise on this team. But their problems probably feel worse than what's here because at least you know there's a rebuild. The quarterback's not 40. The quarterback didn't overthrow the coach. I mean, look, Saleh really never really had a chance once Rodgers got there. You don't have all these things here. So that's why I find it fascinating. People are like, get rid of Mayo, and suddenly it's just going to get better. If this is a conversation after 2 years, I'd be like, that's fair, right? Because you would say, and I've said here, he's probably got 3 years. So 2 years to be able to compare year one and year two is their growth. And if when in year three, if it looks more like year one and there's no growth or stagnation or drop off, then all things are fair. You were given, 51 games to try and prove that you can do this? So you get 50 games to try it. But that's the other thing. It's like seven is too much. You got to go. Like, this is, I mean, what other sport
it's
gets
what
rid of a guy?
Bad organizations do. I'm saying, well, like, again, but, it's what bad organizations
but
do.
But what sport gets rid of their head coach after 7 games? The very first 7 games. Not the first 7 games of, say, season three. That's something different. But the first 7 games in a season.
Right. We're talking Frank Reich, Urban Meyer type stuff. Like, that's it. Like, really, that's what people are talking about right now.
Well, but
that's the only other time I could think it's had, like, midway or so through an initial season. Like,
yeah,
but
I don't know if that necessarily applies only because of the relationship between the head coach and the owner.
Yeah, sure. Right? That's a good point. You're right. So it's a lot closer here.
Right. So that's the situation, right? Because as you mentioned, nobody else was interviewed for the job, which if this is what the owner wants to do, the owner can do that. In that situation, the Rooney Rule operates a bit differently. But if you're interviewing a minority head coach, I think you don't have to interview other people. And I think that bothers some people in that regard. But I would say, get over it.
I think that's a succession clause thing, too, because I'm trying to remember how Jason Garrett got the Cowboys job. Like, it had to be approved by the league office, but it's a special succession clause because he's already on. It's rare. Like, that's the only other example.
And maybe people feel a way because why is this first-time guy getting a rare opportunity? But usually that's how it's going to happen. It's not going to be somebody, unless it's some, let's just say Brian Flores had come back here.
That was my top choice.
Right, and he came back here and he was part of some type of succession clause. Then, it looks a little bit different because he's been somewhere else. But Brian Flores, by time all these things that were developing, as we now found out, Brian Flores was on his way out of Miami. So if you want to say, where does the critical point start for where you know this was going downhill for the Patriots? And where's Brian Flores' availability? It's happening at the same time. Like, he's on his way out of Miami as things are starting to go sour here in New England.
Yeah, and I think one thing to really, that Mayo is going to be judged on, and I think to pay attention to, is, okay, they hired Mayo last January. If you look at all the potential guys they could have hired last January, right? They could have hired Brian Flores. They could have hired Mike Vrabel. They could have hired Jim Harbaugh. They could have hired Ben Johnson, Mike McDonald, too. Those are all, I think, good football coaches. We'll see how they do in their future careers. But if those guys or even several of those guys end up doing a lot better than Mayo, I know it'll be different places. Like, that's going to reflect on the organization, too, because Kraft said before, I think it was the Thursday night game against the Jets, that he picked Mayo in 2019, like, before the guy had ever really been a coach. Like, that's not something a good organization does. And Kraft could end up being right, and Mayo could end up being great, and I could be sitting here being wrong. But I mean, you pick a guy who's never coached before, and then there's all these other candidates that come available, and you ignore it. Like, I don't know. Is that what a good organization does?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question. I guess the question, the other question would be is, would you overpay for someone who's got a great resume and get no results with this particular squad? So part of it still comes down to the squad. Maybe you can get a couple of guys who have played for you to come here where the money is available. I could see that argument because you bring in a head coach. That's part of some of the secret that's going on in Washington. By bringing in people that he had coached in Seattle and in Dallas, he's like, hey, I know you're towards the end of your career, but you can kind of help lead this locker room.
And I think D'Amico Ryans brought in Jimmy Ward from San Francisco to Houston, that made an impact too.
Right. So that, yes, absolutely. Because if you're not going to win the free agent game, the next game that you're only going to, you have a chance in is the head coach who has relationships with other players who'll be willing to come play for that coach. That is something you would not be able to determine back in 2019 because you don't know the landscape of the league at that time. But at the same time, when you're the owner and you know that this is a transition period, maybe you put somebody who's a first-time starter or maybe someone who hasn't really gotten their legs in that position. I mean, this is the same thing with Belichick. Belichick was an in-transition guy after things that didn't work out in Cleveland and didn't get the job in Baltimore when they moved. So he went back to being a defensive coordinator, and then when the situation came open with the Jets and Parcells was about to walk him in, and of course the rest is history. The argument at that time about Belichick was like, hey, this is a guy that only had like one winning season out of four in Cleveland. And didn't really, and it took 3 years for him to take footing. So Kraft may be doing that all over again. It's just a much noisier environment that we're in right now where people, after 3 weeks, are like, you got to make a change. Well, yeah. With Belichick was, 7-9 by his third season and still hadn't had a winning season. I'm saying that if Gerard Mayo's in that position, I don't know if there's a fourth season.
Yeah, and I think, look, it's funny, when Kraft hired Belichick, he was largely, people panned it and looked down on it. But I think there were two significant advantages Belichick had that Mayo doesn't. One, he had actually been a head coach before, which I know he only made the playoffs at one time, but he had had the experience of being a head coach. And two, he had been an assistant for many years and a Super Bowl champion as an assistant. So he had some of that cachet built up that Mayo just doesn't have built up. And again, he could end up being good, but I think you see people 7 weeks in really frustrated because not just that the team is 1-6, but Mayo doesn't have that cachet built up. He's following a guy that everybody around here loves and that won 6 Super Bowls. And let's not forget, it's not like this is the first bad season, right? Like in 2020, when the Patriots went 7-9, there was a lot of people that said, well, they've been good for 20 years. Let's have one reset year, and then we'll get back on track in 2021. Then 21, hey, they make the playoffs. It's great. But now, 22, you had a losing season and missed the playoffs. 23, you were one of the worst teams in the league. Now you're one of the worst teams in the league again. And so I think there is some pent-up frustration from myself included, but a lot of Patriots fans. And I think you see some of that directed at Mayo because now, hey, he's the guy in charge, and they're not any better than they were last year.
Well, again, this is a Kraft call, right? And that's what people just have to come to the realization of, is that he's made this call. I don't think he's budging from that square.
No, I think it's a minimum 2 years. I know you said 3. I think it's at least 2, maybe 3.
Well, I think like 2 years, and then the third year is the deciding year. I don't think he'll get cut at in the middle of that year, but I think 3 is the magic number. I think if Gerard Mayo does eventually get removed from the position, it will be at the end of a season versus in the middle of a season, because that would be a bigger glaring mark on Kraft if he's got to get rid of a coach in the middle of the season, right? So that, when you just talk about like, hey, isn't that like the signs of what bad organizations do?
Yeah, and I think the biggest reason that Kraft will not get rid of Mayo anytime soon is then he would be admitting to the world he massively screwed up.
Right.
Like, and that's probably the wrong reason. But I think that's the number one reason. And then the number two reason is,
But for him, it is. You know what I mean? Like, for him, it would be.
Yeah. No, I think that's the biggest reason for him. But I think also, too, like, I mean, you should give a head coach more than 8 games or 9 games before you get rid
of him. Well, no one could be realistic and think that Mayo's like, just going to be gone before the season over, considering you just put the rookie quarterback in there. So what, you're going to bring in a new guy in? It's like, hey, I've got a new offensive guy. That's going to be absolute chaos. So That I would just wonder, if Mayo starts to turn it around, do you think people will give him the positive energy with the same amount of energy that the negative has been going 1-6?
So this is kind of my feeling. Whenever you follow a legend in anything, right, there's really two ways to get people to embrace you. Either A, you win at a really high level, or B, that legend then endorses you as their successor. Now, we know that's not going to happen, right? Bill's not going to endorse Gerard. So it would have to be him going deep into the playoffs, I think, for people to really be accepting of. I mean, you remember, we were in these chairs.
Oh, if he gets the team to the playoffs next year, it doesn't have to even go deep, because that would be something that hasn't happened since 21.
Right. So you and I were in these chairs after week one, and a lot of people were happy. Like, hey, they won a game. Maybe they're on to something, like, oh, this and that. Now they've lost six in a row, and I think that has really faded. And again, I think to get to a point where people are on board with him, he's going to have to go to the playoffs, and I think he's going to have to go deep into the playoffs. But like you said, as a minimum, he's going to have to get there next year, the year after.
See, to me, that's absolutely crazy, because obviously it's not going to be
What's the standard here, though? It's been deep in the playoffs for 20 years. That's what people are used to.
But wait a minute. I thought it's trying to replace a guy that did all those things, and he hadn't been doing them recently. So I think the first step is getting back into the playoffs. Maybe there's a shot to be neck and neck. Like, I don't even know if winning the division next year is on the cards as much as it is winning probably 10 games. And at least on that last week, seeing, hey, there's a chance they could get in. Maybe they may need some help from some other places. But that would be a huge leap if people would allow it to be, because then you could build upon that. Then I think the attitude of free agents start to change, because we clearly know that the most money isn't bringing them in. So you won't know it if that's the case until you start doing what again?
Winning.
Yeah. So if he gets this in, if this is in a winning mode next year at this time, if we're talking about a team next year at this time, that's like, let's just say they're 5-2. Okay. And then you're like, okay, this is a solid team. And if they just kind of keep their head on a swivel and don't lose their bearings, this could be a 10-win team by the end of December, and maybe a playoff team. So those little small things, because that, look, the networks, the league, they need the Patriots to be good, because the Patriots have been the historical bad guy for the last 25 years for the rest of the country.
And they're a huge team internationally, too.
Right. So you need that bad guy to be good again very soon, so that way they can start, you hear me say, running all that old history tape, and now a new chapter has begun with Gerard Mayo and stuff like that. And that might bring excitement to a different free agent that you didn't see coming. Because think about it. Only one really big free agent on the offensive side of the ball ever came to the Patriots, for the most part, okay? Two, Corey Dillon I'd put there as well, but Corey Dillon was one of those, like, get me out of Cincinnati. The dude was literally sitting and watching games on the bench on purpose, so he was ready to get out of there. So if you have a new era where guys are saying, I want to come to New England, I like what Mayo's doing there, they're winning, I like the moxie that Drake May has going. Those two, Mayo and May, as long as they have a good relationship, great things can happen. It's just not right away. I think some good signs of things will continue to happen, but I think the really good stuff will start to happen next year.
Yeah, and they also have to improve in their own right, right? Like, if they have a great relationship, but we keep seeing the level of coaching and playing we're seeing now, it's not going to matter, right?
I'm just talking about the two of them.
Right? Yeah, no, but I'm also talking about the two of them, right? Like, May's been good, but he's got to get better, and Mayo has not been that good, and he has to get better. So I think if they have a great relationship and they grow together and they get better, then yeah, I think you're totally right. Like, a situation I think to look at, and I know it's not exactly the same thing, but Jordan Love following Aaron Rodgers, right? Rodgers is never going to endorse Jordan Love. You know, he was mad they drafted him, all that. Jordan Love came in, had some little early initial struggles, and all of a sudden, by the end of last year, they're going into Dallas, winning a playoff game. They almost won in San Francisco in the divisional round, and everybody's forgotten about Aaron Rodgers and moved on in Green Bay. Like, I think that's kind of, for people to fully accept Mayo, that's what you're going to need to get to. And of course, as we sit here today at 1-6, you're about as far away from that as you can possibly get. Not to say they could never get there, it's just you're about as far away from that as you can possibly get.
KJ and Lyons on WEEI. Good Wednesday to you. 617-779-7937. Text line 37937. Still to come, we'll talk about the Celtics' dominance last night. Justin Turpin checks in about 30. But right now, we go to break and come back with Playoff Tree. Thanks for hanging out.
This is not a real election ad.
KJ and Lyons bring forth a new nation in sports talk entertainment. A show that believes in appealing to the super smart down to the guy who still acts like a 10th grader.
I'm letting you know that I'm a damn werewolf.
The show that can tie everyday life and Boston sports like no other.
It's high-end stuff, KJ.
This election season, vote KJ and Lyons. A show for the people. By the people.
Yes, KJ and Lyons can.
KJ and Lyons are doing a heck of a job.
And yes, KJ and Lyons are bigly on sports.
Read my lips.
KJ and Lyons are the bee's knees.
Because it is you that KJ and Lyons work for.
I could care less about some kid in college right now.
You better care about him, KJ.
No, here's the thing.
Vote KJ and Lyons. A show for you, the people.
I'm KJ and I overdraft my account to pay for this ad.
This is not a real election ad.
This is KJ and Lyons on WEEI.
KJ and Lyons for the people. WEEI 617-779-7937. Text line 37937. Before we get into Playoff Tree and some of your comments that have come during the show, if you missed any of it, Odyssey app is free. Just go to WEEI. We're at WEEI at night, and you can catch the show chapter by chapter. It breaks it down for you as each break has gone along. We're about 20 minutes away from Justin Turpin checking in here on the show. We'll talk about the Celtics and their dominance last night, and can they go undefeated by time Golden State comes to town? We'll get to all that. We've got a lot of Celtics to talk about. Is there, and Zach, our producer, you get in here and this as well. Is there any household chore that you demand that you do yourself and not leave it to anybody else?
Mowing the lawn, because I like doing it.
Is it like peace of mind for you?
I just enjoy doing it, to be honest with you. And I like the way it looks when it's done and it's all set. And
do you do designs? Do you try and outfield designs?
I don't do that. I don't. But I'm a big.
Is it hard to do with a push mower? I mean, I know you've got the big Kubota out there. No, I'm kidding.
I like to do yard work and I like lawn work and all that.
Do you have a green thumb too? Do you do a little green thumb?
Yeah, it's just something I enjoy. So that's stuff I usually demand to do.
Yeah, my dad does the lawn, but I like doing the pool, like keeping the pool clean.
Keeping the pool clean, but that's seasonal. Then I guess cutting grass is also seasonal. You're not cutting grass in the wintertime. Okay, you guys promise not to laugh at what I'm going to tell you is the chore that I demand that I do and nobody else touch in the house. The laundry.
Okay. You don't want your clothes messed up?
Well, here's why. Oh, my gosh. So I used to work for Nike years ago. This isn't a flex because if you saw the checks, you'd be like, damn, was it a sweatshop? No kidding. And at the time, they had come out with like these really cool like Michigan baseball jerseys. They went with the Huaraches at the time, the ones that the Fab Five wore. So it was like a purple on blue with a purple on blue sneaker. I'm kind of a little bit of old school sneakerhead, right? So at the time, I was in college and I'd stop by my grandmother's house. She was like, oh, make sure you bring your clothes by to wash. She bleaches it because the jersey was primarily white. So I had it with this Michigan jersey that was pink.
Ooh. Yeah, that would scar somebody.
Collector's item. So I was like, you know what? No one will ever touch my stuff again. And so now, like, I will not share my detergent. I will, like, this little scent crystal balls. Like, I'm really huge on those things as well. Like, the fabric softener. I cannot do dryer sheets at all. Like, I've become a dryer sheet snob. Like, it has to be the liquid. I don't want those sheets like floating around the house in a basket. This is really feminine, isn't it?
No, I mean, that I could see. And my dog sometimes likes to try to eat the dryer sheets, so I always have to keep an eye on where they were. So I understand your concern and wanting to make sure you do it yourself.
So much so that I have no manual skills, but if there's one piece of machinery I can fix, it's a washer machine. Is that not crazy? Like today,
that's a good
I did
skill
it.
To have. Those things aren't cheap to fix.
Yeah, because all you need to do is just have, you know, try and work on that with not having like the correct shoes on and get cut, and you'd be like, okay, I clearly know how to do this. But like, let's see, I've changed up the. Okay, so I'm not a rich man, so I still have a top loading washer machine. So it's like, I've got like a 10 series. No, I'll be kidding. But like today, I couldn't figure out why it wouldn't drain, and then I realized it was the little switch. And the MacGyver in me realized that the little thing that kind of pushes it down, you know, sometimes you'll stick a pen in there. I put tape around that top and dropped it in and gave it enough pressure and boom, don't have to replace the machine. Like, I was really impressed with myself.
There you go.
Yeah. So, but you know, shout out to you because I could, like yourself, I can never turn to my wife and say, hey, you want to take part of my piece
of mine and cutting the lawn today.
The only things I really don't like doing are shoveling snow and raking. Other than that, I like most of the outside chores, like pretty much all the other outside.
So would raking? Do you have a power blower for raking?
Yeah, I do. But I just get so many leaves, and then like you know how when the thatch gets in the ground, and I rake it out. Yeah,
right. You got to like pull it up and everything, and then it's like wet and stuff like that. Yeah. So, yeah. But you know what the trick to that is you do you do the big sheet, and do you have like an unsuspecting neighbor? Right.
No, I actually have a huge area behind my backyard, so go. I can put it all there. But I just don't like doing it. And then where I live, it's an every week thing because there's so many leaves and pine needles. So I'm doing it, you know, two or three times a month at least. And it's just like, ugh.
Just what you expected to hear on the night show. Two guys bitching about yard work or pieces of yard work and laundry. But hey, thank you so much for being here.
When it comes to housework, you're just a jag.
You know, that was last night. But yes, just a jag is very popular if you missed that. 37937. Zach, what do you have?
Not a lot of love for Gerard Mayo. One person said that the performance of him as head coach is largely in part because he didn't earn the position. He was just anointed it.
Okay, Garrett? Yeah.
I mean, I think, look, well, and also, to your point, KJ, I don't think Jason Garrett performed that well. Like, I think it's
fair enough, but how long was Jason Garrett in that job?
Was it seven, eight years? Yeah. That's a weird thing about Jerry Jones, too, because everybody thinks of Jerry Jones as this, you know, cowboy, for lack of a better term, that will fire anybody. He's weirdly loyal to coaches. Like, he took a backseat to Bill Parcells, then he stuck with Wade Phillips, I think, longer than people expected, stuck with Jason Garrett longer than people expected. He's already stuck with Mike McCarthy longer than people expected. So he's, when it comes to coach, he's like a lot more loyal than I think his public persona you would imagine.
And who does Kraft perceptively look at in terms of comparisons and owners in the league?
Yeah, he wants to be Jerry. Well, he wants to be Jerry Jones.
Right, so maybe you're taking on that same thing like, hey, Gerard Mayo is his Jason Garrett. I just say that you don't need 8 years for Gerard Mayo to find out that the guy may not be able to get the job done.
Yeah.
Three is the magic number. Yes, it is. All right, 37937. One more text, and then we'll get to playoff tree.
Please explain why NFL professionals who are being paid as professionals and have been playing football since they were kids need to be coached on fundamentals.
Thank you. Like,
well, I think there's
sled suddenly when you get to the pros?
You should do fundamentals in practice no matter what level you're on, because that's just a smart thing to do. But I think as you get older and as you go through high school to college to professional, practices are more about scheme and less about fundamentals, and more of that responsibility goes on the individual player. I still think it should be coached in a practice so everybody's on the same page and you can make sure everybody has good fundamentals. But to the texter's point, the older you get and the higher level you go, the more the fundamentals are your responsibility.
Yeah, well, how many old guys are on this team? The team's average age of years of experience in the league is 3.2. So you have a relatively young team. But again, like the texter says, if you're getting paid, like when you're in college, totally understand you've only got X amount of hours to dedicate to your craft, right? Like imagine you're at like a fast food restaurant and you see a star player in there ordering, like, I don't know, five Big Macs, all these different fries, four different sodas, and they're not an offensive lineman, like, make it fair. Do you think that person has some discipline about their craft and their job?
No.
Okay, so again, these guys have to have some pride in their craft and their job, whether it's what they put in their bodies or what they put into their heads when they're out there on that field, and they're being compensated to work on the clock, 17 days out of the year. 17 days out of the year. And now
they're not working 17 days out of the year. That's unfair. No, it's a year round. It's a 365.
Right, but that's all in the discipline, right? Like you tell yourself that I need to work out. I need to go work with receivers or I need to go work with DBs before I get to camp. Now, that's not mandatory. The only time you hear mandatory is once you get to mandatory camp. So if you come to camp out of shape, that's a lack of discipline. If you get into the season and you're not being where you're supposed to be on key plays, that's going to be a lack of discipline and attention. That is more on the player. If it's a bad scheme, then okay, it's a bad scheme. But if it's a player who can't do their job that's right in front of them, I think that leans a little more on them.
Yeah, and I would agree, but there is an old saying in coaching that you're either coaching it or allowing it to happen. So if
who came up with that saying, though?
I heard it from a guy I used to coach it, to be honest.
Coaching? Yeah, okay.
But it's one of those things where, like, you're right, it's primarily, like, the fundamentals when you get to the NFL, primarily the player's responsibility. But if you're a coach and you see them not doing it well, or they're not, then you have to spend time on it to make sure they get it right. Because ultimately, it's your responsibility how the group as a whole looks. So I think there's blame for both. But yeah, I would say pure fundamentals, it's more the player's responsibility, especially once you're in the NFL.
All right, KJ and Lyons, 5 minutes away from Celtic talk. But right now, it's time for...
That's why we took the damn field. Now, if you want to crown them, then crown their ass. But they are who we thought they were.
Hey, baby, let's go out there like a bunch of crazy dogs. That's some fun.
Playoffs? Playoffs?
Can't wait. And we let them off the hook. Can't wait.
Playoffs?
Son, I got to do better than this.
You kidding me? Playoffs?
Welcome to the playoff tree, where we'll see who really has a chance to get in there and who is hanging by a thread. So let's look at the AFC. These are who I would consider locks. All of these teams have over 80% chance of making the playoffs. Chiefs, Ravens, Bills, Texans, and the Steelers. Three teams have over 90%. That would be the Chiefs, the Ravens, and the Bills. So we've got three spots remaining after those five teams. Indy is the next highest team at 58% chance of getting into the playoffs. Do you agree or disagree, John?
No, I think the next highest one to me that I'm looking at is the Chargers. And I know they're 3-3 and they had that tough loss the other night, but I have a lot of faith in Jim Harbaugh. And I think of all those teams in that area, they have the best quarterback in Justin Herbert.
Well, you just took my thunder. The bolt of the Chargers are next at 48%, so you just answered that. I agree, the Colts, I see them continue on a downslide as long as you keep getting that play from Anthony Richardson. Core, J.K. Dobbins flashed early, but teams are now loading the box on him. It'd be interesting how that all plays out, considering that Denver is kind of sneakily making their way up. Oh, by the way, Denver is the next one in line at 38%. Do you see them getting one of those three spots?
No, I think it's going to be Cincinnati. And I know they had an awful start to the year. They're now sitting there 3-4. They've kind of climbed back into it. And I mentioned Herbert. Burrow's one of the best quarterbacks overall in the NFL. I like Cincinnati to eventually overtake Denver for that final spot.
Well, Cincinnati is tied with Denver at 38% chance of getting into the playoffs. So you're just kind of continually killing the bit, John. But Cincy, because they have the tools in place, I still worry about their defense. They still have to play Baltimore again. They still have what the Steelers may be able to do. So teams that could put up a little bit of offense or put challenge to that defense is where I think you could have Cincinnati in doubt, and they're going to have a tougher schedule than some of these other teams like Denver or the Chargers in front of them. And at 29%, the New York Jets.
You know what? Before the year, I was high on them, but to climb out of 2-5 after they fired their head coach, I mean, I don't know. I just don't see it.
Yeah, it's very hard to see how they get out of that hole. Let's see where Miami is, because Miami clearly is not in that chart with Tua back. So what do the Jets do against the rest of the league when they play their other games or both of their games against teams that they have? And I don't think they've played the Dolphins twice. I don't think they've played them once, have they?
I believe it's. I'd have to double check. But
yeah, so I think they've played everybody once in the division except for the Dolphins, who they'd still have to play twice. So the Jets, I give them an outside chance looking in, considering where the Colts may end up. And if you're not a believer in Denver, there could still be a sliver of hope for the Jets. All right, let's go to the NFC. The locks are Detroit at 93%. The Vikings, Commanders, Packers, and Eagles all have percentages in the 70s, and this is where it gets very interesting. Tampa is next at 66%. I'm not buying them with Godwin and with Mike Evans going down. I think this is the team that we see fumble and crumble.
Yeah, and there's a lot to like about Tampa, but you're right. With both of those guys out, I think they start to slide off. They've already lost to the Falcons, too, this year. So if they don't beat the Falcons the next time around, they'll have that tiebreaker completely lost. So I like Atlanta over them and Tampa missing out.
Yeah, Atlanta's next at 56%. I think Atlanta is now the odds-on favorite to win the NFC South, which will get him in there. The 49ers are in a cold area, 44% chance to make the playoffs. Do they get in?
I think they get in as like that 6 or 7, maybe that last team in. They recover down the stretch because they have a lot of guys out, and Ayuk's now out for the year. But I think by December, they'll be healthy enough to get themselves back in.
It's crazy to think that the Sunday night game between San Francisco and Dallas could be an elimination game for both of those teams. That's absolutely wild to think. Chicago Bears at 40%. They've got to leapfrog somebody ahead of them. Do they do that?
Well, I think the Vikings win that division, the Lions win that division, then the Vikings, then the Packers. I don't think the Bears get it. I just don't think that division's going to send four, because then that would mean that you'd have the Commanders, Eagles, and Cowboys. Only one of them would make it. I think two out of those three end up making it. So I think the Bears are the odd man out.
So here's what's crazy about the AFC West. Seattle is at 30%. All four teams in NFC West are all in this below 40%. So somebody's got to win the division. So is it Seattle winning the division and not making the playoffs, or is it Seattle losing the division and making the playoffs?
Well, if they win the division, they'd be in no matter what. Have them. It's tough. I could see. Yeah, I think they're going to win the division. They're just playing better than San Fran. So that bottom area, it's going to be probably Green Bay, Philly, San Fran, maybe for two spots. That's going to be a heck of a race.
Well, yeah, the Packers are one of those that are already in the 70 percentile rank. So there's a high probability they have them making the playoffs. Arizona's at 30%. I don't know if we're buying them leapfrogging, San Francisco or Seattle in that division. The Cowboys at 17%.
Yeah.
I
think Washington and Philly are both better than them. And that at maximum, the NFC East is going to send two teams.
Wow. And that is Playoff Tree on WEEI. Next, we talk Celtics, plus Justin Turpin checks in at 720. Thank you so much for hanging out on WEEI.